The Venturi's Voice podcast brings together some of technology's brightest minds to discuss all things leadership, technology, and staffing. Keep the conversation going in the Venturi's Voice Slack group and have the opportunity to meet some of our amazing guests. You can download Venturi's Voice via iTunes or via the Venturi Group website at venturi-group.com. Today's guest is Ian Lees, Head of Research and Development at Quantexa. Perfect. So, mate, thanks for doing this, first and foremost. Like we were saying earlier, it's always hard to kind of schedule busy people in. So, you know, really appreciate you kind of taking the time.
No problem at all.
The first actual interesting thing I wanted to ask is because I kind of have seen this quite a lot, looking back at kind of your education and then your kind of progression into consultancy. You know, it's a great kind of stomping ground for a lot of people to kind of get their kind of initial exposure into the kind of beginning part of their career. I've seen it so many times. A lot of friends of mine as well have kind of gone into consulting, went straight into consulting after, university and stuff. Because I think the benefits of it are quite obvious that you kind of get a lot of different exposures. I wanted to kind of touch on that a little bit because do you think that, you know, for you, it was kind of a conscious move to go into consulting because of you felt, you know, were that kind of opportunity to get those different exposures?
Yeah, I guess so. I think I suppose as a graduate, when you're thinking of, what's next, what do I want to do? I kind of decided I want to get involved in something that was kind of very technical. Mm. I started in my last few years of I did physics at as my degree, mm-hmm. and in the last few years I started getting interested in using programming computers to help to crunch data, that sort of stuff, and that really interested me. I started looking for all sorts of jobs really, and ones that really grabbed me was there was a consulting company called Detica where I went to work, and I think as far as was it a conscious decision? I'm not entirely sure. Mm. I said consultancy was what I wanted to really move into. But one thing in sort of all the promotion material and talking to people at company and looking at the sort of work they do was it looked really interesting. And beyond interest, it was solving hard problems using kind of analytics technology, which was definitely something I was interested in. But also on top of that was the list of people that the company worked with. That added a lot of sort of weight to my decision. It was like, I could be working with top tier banks, governments and all around the world. And I think just looking as a graduate, when I was looking into that, the experience that would expose me to definitely looked good, and it looked really exciting. Then when I then moved into started in my role, it wasn't just sort of promotional material and people saying stuff like that. Was really the exposure I got. Mm. And I think the amount of experience you gain in those first couple of years, definitely through, especially in consulting firms, working on different types of projects from mature projects to sort of the greenfield projects. I think you get a lot of experience from that, and you see a lot of different ways of working, and you see how lots of different organizations around the world conduct business and try and solve problems. And that definitely did expose me to a lot of really good experience.
Yeah, it's so important, I think, those kind of early years in one's career, because I think that really kind of molds a lot of the characteristics that I think and the traits that you develop, probably on like a subconscious level, I suppose.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think I found when I initially started, I thought I would be quite a lot more into the sort of the world of doing the analytics and helping to look into the world of fraud and financial crime and helping solve those problems. But I think as I pretty quickly realized that actually it was the technology and the tooling side that really grabbed me. I liked solving the problems, and I liked being able to write software and work on software that mm-hmm. solves those problems. But actually being the person that designed that software and then gave that to teams and multiple projects, that was really where I you know, kind of found that that passion, the drive to take that approach to solving the problems. And that was, it really helped me figure out what I wanted to do.
Yeah. Okay. And like the personalities and stuff like that, I think are very kind of molding. You know, there's always the classic, I suppose, comparison between a corporate experience and like maybe someone in a startup. And, you know, if you are lucky enough to work in an organization where you'll have like a mixture of those personalities, I think you can really see the kind of the difference. And it's interesting because I think that people are kind of willing to change and willing to kind of, you know, adjust the way that they work progressively throughout their career. But still, you know, whatever those early stage kind of experiences are, you tend to stand so strong to those, you know, and it's really interesting because I've worked with people who maybe have like 15 years experience and their early kind of part of their career were kind of startup related. And then they've gone on to kind of work maybe in consulting or then into, you know, more corporate roles. And you still can sense that kind of that startup way of doing things. And they may have only done it for like a couple of years, but it was right at the beginning of their career. And I don't know why that is, but people, you know, that I think it's just the formative years, isn't it? And that's where you kind of build out that personality. It's always like a kind of interesting insights I always find. And it's quite an obvious one when you see the difference in personalities.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think listen to you there about, you know, how people take what they learn in those first couple of years and that sticks with them. I think that's true of me. I think I was really lucky to have to join a very high performing team and full of lots of people who were really happy to, you know, share and pass on their knowledge. And I think, thinking back to like my first sort of main managers and supervisors, they really instilled into me a lot of traits that I still hold, you know, as really important. So things like attention to detail when you're writing code and making sure that the end users of your application are going to find it easy, and trying to make sure that you're thinking about not only the end users but also the people that have to set up and integrate the software. So where we work with some fairly high-end software that's, you know, takes a lot of effort to integrate, and it closely integrates into client systems. And I think because of that, you need to think of not only the end users, the people that are that will be, you know, using the interfaces or that sort of thing, but as well as that, the project teams, and that's really important. And I think as far as approaches to things go, I think where I first started, it was maybe that nice mix of a little bit startup-y, but also had that corporate commercial feel just because of the people that we worked with. So when you're working with, you know, tier one banks and government organizations, there's some expectations as far as how people act and behave. You know, they expect a very level of professionalism, or, you know, all the way down to wearing suits and stuff in meetings, that sort of things. And I think, having that approach has definitely helped. And now, as I've transitioned from that culture, but now I'm firmly in the world of startups, I think hopefully I've taken a good mix of both. I think my approach to product development and product management and engineering management, all those things, are fairly startup-y, so very agile, mm-hmm. making sure that we can quickly pivot if requirements change or the sort of the way that we're doing business changes, but as well bringing in those aspects of being able to work with from large clients and making sure that the quality levels of our software are up to scratch for working with these, you know, really high-end, high-expecting institutions.
Yeah, yeah. Well, exactly. It's almost like it's kind of been that fit. And like you say, you know, now working with, you know, again, another high-performing startup, that I think for me, like, the technical abilities and like where maybe you got your education from, all that comes secondary to fitting in culturally with an organization. And I think that's, you know, where if you do have the kind of mixture of exposures, it can be easier for you to adjust to a different environment. You know, working in a startup, I think, is massively to do with like culture, especially in like the earlier stages. And, you know, to go through something like, you know, what Quantexica about to go through, which is probably, you know, a massive phase of growth. You have to be adaptable, because in the early stages, like say, it's very true to the culture. You know, you're working within a smaller team. You know, you need to fit in with that kind of that brand. And then as things scale, you know, things do change. And I think it's interesting that what you see typically is that a lot of the people who've been there a long time, they really struggle to kind of adjust to the environment around them. So it's paramount maybe that, you know, someone like yourself who's had a mixture of experiences, is part of that program so that they can kind of, I suppose, lead the way and fit into what's inevitably is going to change.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think in the last 2.5 years, so I've been at Quantexa now for almost since it started. I think I was I'm the first employee of Quantexa after the founders, and started pretty quickly after the company started. So from on day one, it was as far as the R&D team or the engineering team, it was just me. And we were, you know, we're a small company working with trying to sort of make our place in the market and trying out ideas, trying out new technologies, that sort of thing, and trying to see what we can build. And then we've grown a huge amount over those last 2.5 years. So I think we're approaching, you know, 100 people in the company now. My R&D department has about 14 people in it at the moment. I've gone from it just being me working on the product on my own and, you know, building it out, and just, you know, it's just me, to leading a team of 14 people. So obviously things have to change. You can't continue working. And I think the experience that I've had of working in small teams, big teams, and along the way has really helped me try and shape my team, my leadership style. And I think one thing that's really important is trying to maintain a little bit of that, you know, trying to maintain that culture. Mm-hmm. So for example, when we first started, it was very, very much researchy. We're experimenting with new ideas, new techniques, seeing if these worked. Obviously, as you start to get bigger, those things become harder. You have paying customers who need new releases, they need bug fixes, that sort of thing, and they're all part of building an engineering team that delivers, you know, high quality professional software. But I think one of the things I've always tried to encourage is keeping hold of that, being at that ability to try stuff out and do a bit of research. So effectively in my engineering team, I try to encourage my team to experiment with new ideas, almost like in a sort of safe space. You know, this isn't going out into production. Let's try a few things out. If they don't work, fine, we'll abandon that and we'll try again. And then we'll move on to new idea, to a new way of doing it. But if it does work, obviously you found a new way of doing something. Maybe it's more performant, more effective. It brings more value to the customer, and those sort of things are hugely important. That's how, you know, that is innovation. That's research. And without, if you're not doing those sort of things, you'll slow down, and eventually some other new startup will catch you up and have a cooler, better product than you. So you know, it's important that we keep that startup feel even while we're going through huge growth and transitioning into very much a scale up and a mid-sized company.
Yeah, and kind of embedding those formalities. I think they get confused, don't they? You know, when you look at creating a bit more structure and formality, because, you know, as you well know, you know, you wear many hats when you're kind of early stage, right? And it's obviously necessary to do that. But as you kind of formalize, I think what a lot of people do is they kind of always go, or organizations should I say, they go kind of too far with it, and it's like, well, we're formal now, we have to behave in a certain way. And it's, yeah, and it's, you know, and I think that's where, you know, there's subtle changes. There's the need for, you know, structure, but there's no need for bureaucracy, right? So I think that's kind of that's the balancing act that you'll face inevitably.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you're right. You almost need to build a structure which kind of which keeps hold of those goals, those behaviors and characteristics that made it work so well in the beginning. So like I was saying, like, you know, being able to have this sort of safe way to experiment with new ideas and try out new innovations without, you know, horrible tight deadlines, which could maybe hamper that sort of thing, those sort of problems. Mm-hmm. I think on top of that, you know, we try and keep, when we first started the company, it was a fairly close knit. It's a small company. You're all working hard on this new idea. You're trying to strive to keep to build a company. And I think that creates strong bonds between, you know, the first few employees and, you know, we'd known each other previously, and I think because of that, you know, we were fairly, you know, we were all friends as well as colleagues, and I think that's something that we at Quantaxa we're trying to keep hold of as well. So we, you know, we have lots of socials. We do we've done like big summer socials where we get the whole company together. We do events where we share knowledge, whether it's technical knowledge or more information about, you know, the sort of markets that we're working in. And I think, yeah, we just try and keep a very friendly, relaxed environment, which hopefully keeps that sort of startup vibe, while at the same time we're, you know, building structures around how we do business, how we deliver projects, how we build our product, that sort of thing.
Do you ever like worry as well, like on a personal level, about that kind of sense of fulfillment? And I suppose what I mean by that is, you know, when it's an early, because I'm only speaking from experience on this, by the way. But you know, when it was very early stage, you were hands on, and you kind of got that gratification like almost every day, because you'd almost do something each day or at least each week where it felt as though you were kind of making progress, you were making strides towards something. So that kind of feedback loop, if you like, you know, mentally, is much shorter. And then as the company grows, obviously, and maybe as you have to kind of move into more of a managerial role, maybe as like the products get set, you know, that feedback loop becomes a lot longer, and that kind of sense of fulfillment, it's there, but it's in a different way. And I felt from my experience that I had to kind of adjust my expectations on that as the company grew, because I was so used to kind of feeling like the buzz every day of like kind of doing something and putting something in place, and it kind of had a direct impact straight away. And obviously over time, it's not as kind of quick and ad hoc as that. Whereas, you know, so for me mentally, I had to kind of make those adjustments so that I still kind of got a sense of fulfillment out of it. But I had to understand that it would come from a different place and probably, you know, on a different kind of time scale, and you know, maybe even getting it from seeing others succeed and things like that. I don't know if you've kind of had similar experiences to that, but I personally found that actually quite challenging.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think you know, even from my journey of being the only person, the only developer in the company, and then now leading the development team. So, you know, at the very start of the company, my feedback loop was I was writing code, I was writing new products, I was, and I think this is probably a thing that you find with a lot of software developers, as they get more senior, they probably take on more, like you said, managerial and, in my case, more sort of leadership and strategic roles. I think it's definitely not for everyone. Some people will always want to just write code, but for myself, it was... Yeah, no, it's a transition that I've enjoyed. And yeah, you're right, you do have to make some adjustments. You know, it's not about writing code anymore, it's about leading a team. So nowadays I'm mentoring my team. We're, you know, in, you know, how I'm how to code, how to architect systems, how to design systems, how to solve problems, and how all the sort of things that I've learned as a developer, and now, you know, trying to help others take on that knowledge. And actually, I find that really fulfilling, that building a team, building people aspect of it. It's great to see when, you know, you can, you take maybe a junior developer and you develop them, and you start to see them get to the point where they, you know, you can throw any problem at them. You can ask them to solve any issue that maybe a client or a project team are having, and they'll just tackle it. They'll solve it, and you don't have to even worry. And I think something that's fulfilling there is you see, okay, when I was a developer, it was just me working on stuff. Now I have a team. You know, we're churning out work. It's going 10 times as quick as when it was just me. And that's, you know, that's great to see. I think on top of that, moving to the more sort of leadership and strategic level, that's also quite fulfilling. You know, making big decisions, but doing it from a technical standpoint, I think that's good to see. And like you say, it does have a longer feedback loop. You know, if you make a decision now, you might not know if it proves fruitful for months, maybe half a year, that sort of thing. But you still get the reward. It's just, like you said, a longer cycle.
It's certainly an adjustment, but like you say, I think when you get used to seeing and understanding scale, that's, I think, when you kind of realize the impact. And it's weird because I felt like I wasn't doing as much, to be honest, but yet the results were getting better. And that's
I'd agree. Yeah, you find I found, like, before when it was, I was writing a new feature, I was like, oh cool, I did a new feature today. Whereas when you decide to, I don't know, maybe start development on a whole new product, and then 3 months later, an entire product that you can sell to a new client comes around. That's like you said, it's a scale thing. It's not just a piece of work or some lines of code you wrote. It's the output of a whole team, and that, I think that scale is just, it can be even more rewarding.
Yeah, I agree. Are you kind of looking forward to the role? I'm assuming that kind of your role is going to adjust as well as you scale. Maybe probably involved in like more people to manage and such things. Is that like something now that, like you obviously mentioned earlier, but that you're embracing and you're particularly looking forward to, I suppose? Is there any aspects there?
Yeah, no, I enjoy the people side, the managing and the mentoring. I think as probably the next step for me is moving on from being just sort of a manager and also a semi member of the team. You know, I still have time to do a bit of development and help the design decisions, that sort of thing. The next stage for me is becoming a manager of managers, where I'm trying to, you know, I'm just because of scale, I need to have a set of team leads who I instruct, and then they speak to their teams. I think that's definitely the next stage for me. I'm looking forward to that. I mean, it gets even bigger. I've spent a lot of time reading books on engineering management and that sort of stuff, trying to prepare and do some research and learn. So hopefully learn some good techniques there.
Definitely, yeah. Everyone kind of goes to the books, don't they, at that point of inflection, I suppose.
I think it's something, it's one of those things where you can't, I mean, obviously you used to do this with coding and stuff, but with coding you can test something out. You know, if you want to try a new idea, you write the code and you see if it works. People aren't, so you can't really do that with people. You know, there's longer cycles, you can't get that experience, and it's probably not so good if you make a mistake or do something wrong. So you want to avoid that, obviously. So going to books and stuff is I found some really interesting books and some really interesting insights, that even just ones that make you think, just sort of consider, oh, okay, I understand, and maybe I could have applied that to this situation that I've been in previously. Yeah. So, you know, that's really good.
Yeah, I agree. It is important, and I think you're obviously doing the right thing with that regard, because it is essentially, you know, a completely different role. to you know, to code. It's like a new career almost, isn't it? In a way. And I think it needs to be approached in that sense. Just on that as well, like, just as from your opinion, obviously, because I think management can be such a different role to, you know, to you know, development or coding. Do you think that it is 100% necessary now to have technical people going into those positions? Because obviously it's not always the case, isn't it? Especially with like people like product managers and stuff. They're not always necessarily technical themselves, but they seem to manage technical teams. What are your kind of thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting one. I think people don't necessarily need to be hands-on technical, you know, being able to write code, etc. And almost sometimes you find that can be, especially in maybe product management or those sort of roles, it can almost be a bad thing in the sense that you might try and design the solution for the coders rather than saying, here are my list of requirements. Can you please, you know, solve this problem? I think it's probably not, it's not required to have the hands-on stuff. I think having an appreciation of what's going on, and also a willingness to learn. So, you know, you don't need to understand the finest details of how things work, but, you know, even having an idea of how an architecture fits together, or if you've got some sort of, I don't know, processing pipeline of first we do this, then we do this, then this happens, et cetera, et cetera. Being able to understand those things at a high level, I think, is important. And I think it's probably important for all sorts of roles, from even beyond just, say, the engineering management and product management. So I think having that appreciation and being able to, you know, speak to engineers or speak to people who have very specialist skills and say to them, you know, can you explain this to me? I want to understand. I think that is important to have that level of understanding. But as far as the hands-on technical skills, I think you probably don't need those.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? It is an interesting one, because it's like counterintuitive to what a lot of people say, that, you know, you need everyone will need to learn how to code at some point. You know, it's going to be almost like a requirement in, you know, in early stage schooling and things like that. But then yet, you know, we're seeing kind of, you know, a lot of non-technical managers now. So it's just an interesting one. I don't have too much of an opinion on it, really, because I suppose I haven't really had the experience directly with it. But it's always an interesting one to raise, I find.
Yeah, no, I think it's just that being, that sort of throwing yourself into the problem space. You don't need to be able to do the hands-on coding. That's not your role. But, you know, knowing what the coders are doing and what they're trying to achieve is important.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, obviously to this point, we've kind of covered, you know, quite a bit. And, you know, I suppose it's kind of flowed from the start, you know, and hopefully kind of people got a sense for, you know, the early experiences at the start of your career and, like, you know, now where you're up to now and how you're kind of planning to kind of move things forward. So obviously taken probably a lot of learning and resilience at times as well. You know, is there anything that you think you can look back on and you feel you particularly kind of held true to yourself and has been kind of one of the main consistencies throughout your career that you feel has kind of allowed you to have, you know, the level of success that you've got to this point?
Yeah, I guess talking about it, probably does go back to one of the first things we talked about some of those things that I learned early in my career. So I think, as I was saying, attention to detail is so important. Like making sure that you not necessarily get stuff right first time. That's, you know, that's impossible. It's not kind of how you should approach things. But, you know, making sure that things are going to be maybe easy to use, so that you don't have 10 people saying, oh, how do I do this? Because clearly if you solve that problem, you don't have those 10 people come to talk to you. Or, you know, just doing a little bit extra, you know, being a bit more diligent on testing, looking for some corner cases, that sort of stuff that, you know, if it's further down the line, they will be harder to solve, they'll cost more time, more effort. I think as well as the attention to detail, it's also understanding what the customer wants and what your customers are, how your users and customers are using your product and your software. So I've seen and have some friends and stuff who maybe have worked in organizations where the development teams maybe haven't understood quite as much about that. And I think it can then be hard to produce the software that the customers really want. Now, it's not important for, the engineering team to know exactly how a fraud investigator, for example, actually finds fraud and what process they go through. But to see, to maybe have an experience of, a demo of a user using the software that you wrote and seeing what buttons they click, what functionality they use, what their workflow is, and seeing what, just listen to them talk about how they're using your software and what's important to them, I think is massively insightful. I think, and it's something that I've always encouraged everyone in my engineering team to do. You know, they don't need to be able to find and detect fraud, but knowing how people use our software is hugely important. And I think it has massively benefited in sort of the engineering that we've put into our products, and also making sure that we're focusing our efforts in the right places, because as a small company, as a small team, we don't have huge amounts of manpower, so we need to make sure what we do is very valuable and is the right stuff, rather than maybe doing something half right to start with.
Agreed, mate. Agreed. Ian, mate, it's been a pleasure. I think we're right at half an hour now, so it's I think we covered that and rounded it off quite nicely. Thanks very much, mate. I really enjoyed the chat.
Yeah, no, thank you very much for your time. You're really good.
Thanks for listening to the show. I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode over on the Venturi's Voice Slack group. See you next time.